Jordan Dance!
Bring him up, gang. Bring him up.
Here we go. History in the making.
Green, green, green.
What a weekend in Chicago for Sweet Van Gisbergen. And now he gets a chance to do it all over again at Sonoma. And does anybody but SVG want to go back to the street course in Chicago? Hi, this is Brett McMillan. You're listening to the Pit Reporters. With me this week, Dylan Welch from the CW and Toby Christie from TobyChristie.com.
Welcome to the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network. And now, here's your host, Brett McMillan.
Welcome to the show. Glad to have Toby and Dylan here. And Dylan, you got to do it on Saturday, and the rest of us got to watch it again on Sunday. And as we're calling him now, Sweep Van Gisbergen becomes just the second driver. This is kind of hard to believe. The second driver to win the pole for both an Xfinity and Cup races and the races in the same week. And the only other guy to do it, Kyle Busch, back in 2016 at Indy. That's kind of hard to imagine that he's only the second guy to do that.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to the competitiveness of NASCAR, right? Probably that not very many guys have done that. And in the same train of thought, also speaks to the ability of those two guys that have done it and their prowess kind of on those particular tracks. So Kyle obviously used to kind of be the king of Bristol, and SVG is obviously kind of asserted himself as the guy to beat at Chicago. So pretty good company for both those two.
I mean, Toby, very impressive. And the thing is, you know, he kind of blew away the field in both races last weekend.
Yeah, no, he did. And when you think about things, you know, the two drastically different cars too, that's what makes it really impressive for me, is that the Cup car and the Xfinity car are so different these days. It was still impressive when Kyle Busch was doing this kind of thing, but with the car so different, it's really, really impressive to see that those skills translate to both. And especially at a road course with the different transmissions now, too, it's pretty impressive that he didn't have any kind of hiccups throughout that process as well.
Yeah, and neither case did he lead the entire race. I mean, think about the Cup race. Michael McDowell gets out there early. He leads early. I mean, SVG didn't take the lead until late in the race in the Cup race, Dylan. So, I mean, there was some drama there whether or not he was going to be able to do it. But once he gets in front, he's hard to chase down.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, is that he's so smart working his way back to the front of the field and just takes care of his equipment so well and you know, probably better than most of the other guys in the field, that you know, they're driving so hard just to try to stay ahead of him, and he's just kind of cruising through the field, that when he, you know, and so when he does get out in front, he's still got plenty of equipment left and nobody in his way to slow him down is probably the biggest thing. So, yeah, it's so impressive. And the way he does it, you know, every time he does win one of these races is just a masterclass and road racing. So it's enjoyable to watch.
You know, it's funny, after he won that race at Mexico, Toby, a lot of the fans are going, "Oh, this is like last year when Harrison Burton won, and it's, you know, he's way 30 something in points. It's just not fair that he's going to make the playoffs." And we're all like going, "He's not done winning this year. We fully expect him to win at least one more and maybe multiple more races. We still have two more road course races before the end of the regular season. Oh, and by the way, one of them's this week."
Yeah. Yeah. And then once you get in the playoffs, there's another one there. So if he can work his way to the Roval with being in contention in the playoffs, he'll still be in a good spot. But yeah, to your point, for the first 15 races, a lot of people were kind of going, man, you know, I know they went with SVG, but was this the right call with him so far back in the points? But now we're starting to get in the road course season. He's really proven that decision by Justin Marks to bring him full-time Cup Series racing. He proved that decision right, and he's continuing to prove that decision right. When you look at the oval performance too, I'm actually blown away, because he's gotten a lot better on the ovals as well. Early in the season, it looked pretty rough, but he's kind of being more consistent inside the top 10, top 15 in some of these races. And I think as we keep going on, there's a chance he gains enough experience down the stretch, gets enough lucky breaks down the stretch as well in the playoffs, that he could possibly advance. And if he's still available once the Roval comes around, that's a really dangerous spot.
The thing is, you look at it right now, Dylan, and no, he's not going to get a top 10 finish, so he's not going to get any more playoff points by finishing in the top 10. But right now, the man has 11 playoff points, which would put him in fourth place. I mean, Kyle Larson's got 23. Denny Hamlin has 19. Christopher Bell's got 16. Or my fifth place, because William Byron's got 12. You know, gosh, if he picks up another win, there's five more. And all of a sudden, you're looking at him starting the playoffs in, you know, fifth place, sixth place, seventh place. I mean, he's not going to be 16th, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think the good thing about them, you know, winning not only one race, but now, you know, a few just to, or, you know, a couple just to kind of guarantee them, you know, in the playoffs. The nice thing about that is now they can just kind of go to work on stockpiling as many of those points as they can, whether it's stage points or playoff points by winning a stage, you know, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, that's the case for everybody, but especially for SVG, you know, as he does continue to improve on these ovals, maybe they are in a position where, you know, they can sneak a stage win or two out on one of these ovals. So I think it's a great position for them to be in. And as you guys said, there's still plenty more opportunities for him to get a couple more wins before the regular season is up. So they're in a good spot. And I think they'd have to feel good about it.
That's the thing. When you talk about, you know, Dylan talked about the fact you've got another road course in the second round of the playoffs. Well, the way he's starting off the playoffs with the number of stage points he's going to be able to carry, the number of playoff points he's going to be able to carry with him into the playoffs, he's not going to have a free pass into the second round. But if he performs okay in the first round, he may have enough points to get himself into the final 12, which then, oh, by the way, gets him into the round that has the Roval in it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And when you think about it, you look at that first round, Darlington's in there, and he's been pretty good at Darlington, which is weird because usually a guy going into oval racing for the first time or even a rookie in these kind of things are not very good at Darlington, but he's been very, very good at Darlington comparatively to his other oval races. So I feel pretty good that if he can just manage it like Bristol and I don't remember what the third race is in the first round, but if he can just manage through those other couple
races. New Hampshire, yeah.
So if he can get through those two races, I feel pretty good about his performance at Darlington, where I feel like he has himself in a position where he could advance. So especially, we always see people in the first round feel overconfident going into it, and we see a lot of mistakes happen, a lot of pit crew mistakes, a lot of driver mistakes from some of these guys in the playoff you know, field of 16 that feel like, oh, this is an automatic advance. Let's just go for it. And then all of a sudden you get two races into it and you're like, okay, that's not an automatic advance anymore. And then they're in trouble. So as long as he can just kind of keep it steady and get through, I think it'll be okay.
All right, Dylan, you're spending every week with the Xfinity guys. So how do they feel about Van Gisbergen coming down last week and then maybe again this week at Sonoma and stealing their lunch money?
Well, I think it speaks not only to his talent, but also the strength of Junior Motorsports right now. You know, I think SVG was the sixth different driver to win for them this year, which is pretty remarkable. As competitive and tough as the Xfinity Series field is, I think it just shows how good the JRM cars right now. And you know, Suarez at Mexico City having to drive through the field, come from the back and get it done. So I think it just comes with the territory. And I think if you are a guy like SVG, you know, you get in this car and you know the strengths of the team, and that only kind of galvanizes you more. But you know, I think too, you know, if you're an Xfinity Series full time guy, he's the benchmark, right? You know, if you want to get to Cup one day, you're likely going to have to beat him there too. So you better take the opportunity when he's you know, racing against you to try to learn as much as you can, to study him. And use it to try to get yourself a little bit better, because he and the rest of the Cup guys, you know, are continuously getting better on the road courses. So he's a pretty good one to study, I think, if you're trying to get better.
Toby?
Yeah, and you talked about the strength of Junior Motorsports this year, and for Chevrolet in general, it's been a really strong year. They've won all but two races, I think, this year in the Xfinity Series, and then, of course, you know, Saturday's win by SVG marked their 10th straight win in the Xfinity Series competition for Chevrolet. So, really strong year for Chevy, and really, really strong year for Junior Motorsports. And like Dylan said, I mean, if you have aspirations for being in Cup, like guys like Sam Mayer and those guys do, you've got to compete against this guy, and this is going to get them really ready for the Cup Series too, battling against guys like this. You got guys like Suarez, like he mentioned, at Mexico City, getting these Cup level talents up there in this really good equipment to battle each week like this really gets you prepared for Cup.
Well, when we come back, Chicago finally got through a weekend without weather issues. Now what's the future look like? We'll talk about that. Stay with us.
This is Kyle Petty for Echo Park Automotive. As you might imagine, I know a thing or two about cars, and I'm here to tell you about a whole new way to buy a car, truck, or SUV. Did you know that Echo Park Automotive has over 95,000 five-star reviews? On top of that, every car that Echo Park Automotive sells goes through a 190-point inspection to make sure that it looks and drives like new, so you leave happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
Whether your engine runs daily or only when you need it, Z-Max Micro Lubricant is the force you need against carbon buildup that can damage your engine. Combustion causes carbon and other harmful deposits to build up in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. And carbon is like sandpaper rubbing against your engine's internal parts. You don't want that. You want Z-Max Micro Lubricant. It soaks into metal and keeps your vehicle running at peak performance. Find out more at ZMAX.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter. Protect your engine to the max with Z-Max.
Catch Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown with Charlie and Debbie here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
Here's Christopher Bell.
My Toyota Camry TRD race car isn't cheap to build and prepare. I have a pit crew that maintains and fixes my equipment. I have a spotter high above the track watching my back, talking me through turns and potential dangers on the track. I physically train to handle the stress of driving. And I have software helping my crew chief and engineers make the right strategy calls. And with all this, I never take my eyes off the road, and neither should you. One distraction can change everything in one instant.
Brett McMillan returns with more of the Pit Reporters here on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back along with Toby Christie from TobyChristie.com, Dylan Welch from the CW. I'm Brett McMillan. Glad to have you with us. Three times now we've been to the Chicago Street Course, Toby, and got through one without weather issues and saw some pretty darn good racing as a result of it. So the big question becomes, we knew it was a three-year deal with a couple-year option. The mayor of Chicago reportedly told the Sports Business Journal that he'd be interested in having it come back again, but he doesn't want to do the 4th of July weekend, which I find interesting because as much as disruption as traffic as it is for traffic in that Lincoln Park area, Grant Park area, wouldn't you want to have it around a holiday weekend as opposed to disrupting traffic on a regular work week?
I mean, I would think so. But again, I'm not running the city, so I don't know. That might not be, you know, I don't feel like I think that's above my pay grade as far as trying to figure out how what's better for a city. But as far as how the weekend turned out, finally not having weather impact things was great. I feel like the action was awesome. I know SVG kind of dominated things towards the end in the final stage of the Cup race, but I feel like overall throughout the whole weekend, there was really good action. I love that street course. The layout of it, for whatever reason, always plays itself to really good action. And when they first showed the design of it, everybody was like, oh man, I don't know. That's a lot of really, really high braking points. I don't know if this is going to translate very well with all the long straightaways you have and stuff like that. But it's done a really good job at putting on a really, really good show. And I hope to see it keep going.
All right, Dylan, you could be the mayor of Chicago. What do you think?
I don't know about that. I don't think they would want that. I echo what Toby said. I mean, I think I only worked it last year and this year, so wasn't there for the first year. But I felt like there was a lot of people there this weekend, like even more than maybe the year prior. You know, the city seemed into it and seemed excited about it. And you know, like I hosted a couple Q&As during the day on Saturday, and there was a lot of people that were just kind of out milling around, you know, kind of inside the course. So I would love it to go back, you know, and I think that market obviously is you know, is a market that is important to NASCAR. But I think the good thing is too, is that they kind of have their blueprint now of what works and even, you know, not even just from a track layout, but, you know, just the logistics of everything, how quickly they can get a track up and get it down, all those things that matter and make a difference. So, you know, as a Midwest guy, I'd love it to stay in Chicago, but, if it goes somewhere else, then I think that NASCAR will be just as prepared and more prepared now than they were 3 years ago to do it the right way.
Well, I think regardless of whether we go back to Chicago or not, Toby, the proof of concept is there. NASCAR can go with the current car and run a street course, which I think is important because it now opens. I mean, nobody's building oval tracks because the cost is just astronomical and the return on investment is very difficult to get. Now you can go touch markets like Seattle, like a San Diego, like maybe a New Orleans, places that you're not able to get now because there aren't tracks there. But I think the proof of concept has been, yes, you can now go places like that.
Yeah, no, it opens up the box to anywhere. Any place that wants NASCAR can now have NASCAR if the price is right, if it makes sense for everybody involved. And you kind of go back to like the Clash. We did it with the quarter mile short track layout. And I thought that was cool too. And I think that showed that you could bring a short track anywhere around the country. And so the fact that we've got these possibilities now all of a sudden really opens up things, changes the game as far as what the schedules could look like for years and years and years to come, where we were so stagnant for so long, right? We all knew exactly, okay, this is the schedule. We know this is where we're going to be going. This, is, you know, we were talking before we even got in here about just some of the different changes of the last couple of years, and we're trying to figure out, okay, what did they remove for that? Because I don't remember now. And so we've had so much change now that it's been refreshing. And now with all this showing that you can be successful with a street course in the NASCAR Cup Series, NASCAR Xfinity Series, it just opens itself up to a lot of other markets getting NASCAR races.
Dylan, do you think one street course race a year is enough, or would you be open to a second one on the schedule?
Well, I think it depends maybe where it's at and all of the other logistical things that go into it. I like the concept of it, and I like the fact that you know, now you can go to these markets where there are no racetracks. Maybe if we do two, we do is an oval street course. Is that a possibility? Do you think would that work? Would that be at all feasible? I don't know. You'd have to, I guess, find the right city. But to your point, you know, nobody's building new racetracks anywhere. So maybe we drop an oval somehow into one of these cities.
And I think this also opens up, well, the possibility of maybe, you know, because I think everybody likes the idea of at least one international track. So maybe it's not necessarily an international road course. It's an international street course, which becomes your second street course, but also is also your international course, Toby.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. And that's something I could definitely see. It would be a good way to kind of captivate the international audience as well. They're so used to street courses over there as well as regular road courses. So there's a lot of different things you can do with this being a possibility. But I kind of do, you know, unless it's a really preferred destination that people really want to see, I would like to kind of see it stay as one of these per year just because it's special, it's different, it's unique. And I'm kind of worried if you do multiple of these per year, maybe it starts kind of diluting it a little bit. But we've seen good product from it. So until we don't see good product, I don't mind going to extra ones. But again, I don't want to lose the specialness of it as well.
Well, Dylan, you talked about the vibe in Chicago last weekend, and you felt there was a good vibe last weekend. It was the third year. Would you like to see it go back to Chicago, or would you be happier to see, you know, there's been reports, for instance, that San Diego could be on the table. Would you rather see NASCAR tap into a new market instead? Because there's been talk that maybe at Chicago, the Chicagoland Speedway could be back on the table, but that's Joliet. 40 miles outside Chicago, that's not really Chicago.
Yeah, and I think that's it, right? Is that, you know, the Chicago market, they have the option of another racetrack there. And, you know, and you're, even though it is in Joliet, you know, I think you're still kind of appealing to that Midwest market of Indianapolis and Milwaukee and you know, even Chicago, even though it is out of the way, if you're a race fan and you're going to go to the street course, you know, you probably were going to go to Joliet too, if you're a real race fan. So I think because they have that there, you know, you'd have to think that they're a little more inclined to maybe shop it around elsewhere. And obviously everybody knows that they want to have a footprint in Southern California. San Diego would be a pretty awesome destination. I think selfishly, all of us would enjoy probably going there. It'd be pretty cool to have NASCARs, you know, racing around there, but, you know, it remains to be seen, I guess, what they end up doing.
And I think Dylan hits the nail on the head. NASCAR would love to have a presence in Southern California. They haven't had one except for the LA Coliseum since Fontana closed. And we've had Lee and Reed Spencer on the show, and they have said numerous times that, you know, they've been by the Fontana facility and said they wouldn't go near it again without a hazmat suit on and said there's no indication that they see that if ever again they're going to race at Fontana, it is years and years and years away. So, you know, as important as the Chicago market can be, not only for the fans but for sponsors, the Southern California market's sitting out there untapped as well.
Yeah, and another aspect for the Southern California side of things from a street course standpoint is weather should be pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? So the issues we had the first couple years of Chicago, most likely, I mean, anything can happen, but most likely shouldn't be an issue. So from that side of things, it would be good. It's a great market, like Dylan said, and it's a market that NASCAR's coveted for a long time. And seeing this being so successful in Chicago, I think this is a successful venture to try to make that happen over there, especially with Fontana. Yeah, it looks like that situation is going to be a long way out if it ends up coming to fruition anyway, the short track in Fontana. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm not against the idea of doing a Southern California street race. I think there's a lot of benefits to that too.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And certainly Dylan, Ben Kennedy has not been shy about trying new things, has he?
No, not at all. I think that's one thing that has been, as Toby said, really refreshing about the last few years with the schedule is that, you know, fans kind of clamored for something new and they heard that and they've brought back these legacy racetracks that everybody wanted and they're trying new stuff as well. So, I think that's all you can ask for, right? As a race fan, is people running the sport that, you know, that understand the desire for new and creative ideas. And this group has done a really good job of executing that.
And we do know that, one of the newer places on the schedule will be returned to next year is, this week, COTA started, advertising to buy ticket packages for next year. No date announced, but they are advertising that they are selling tickets for NASCAR events next year. So we do know we'll be going back to Austin, Texas again next season, which I think is a great market of the super, super road course. World-class F1s run there. IndyCar runs there. So I think it's a great place for NASCAR to continue. Well, each week on the Pit Reporters, we give you a chance to go to goprn.com and vote in our poll. And this week's poll is not really a question. It's more letting you react to a statement. NASCAR and street racing. Do you want to keep one on the schedule? Hit Chicago one more time. Let's try San Diego or no more. Last week we asked you, who puts on the best racing? And 35% said Echo Park Speedway in Atlanta. 32% said Kansas. And then a tie at 16% between Daytona and Talladega. Interesting. When we come back, Daniel Suarez had a chance to talk a little more about his leaving Trackhouse and gave it a little more insight into the fact that it wasn't a surprise at all. Stay with us.
Listen up, fellow timeshare owners. If you're a timeshare owner and you want out at all costs, you're done, frustrated, tired of wasting money, you don't use the darn thing. Get out now. Hire the best bulldog timeshare cancellation team in the business. Their in-house legal team, headed by a timeshare cancellation lawyer, can help you fight the biggest and baddest companies out there that sell timeshare. At some point, you were using your timeshare, but now you're not, and you're tired of wasting money. Before you go to the poorhouse, Call right now and learn how you can stop the maintenance fees and put more money back in your pocket. Their services cost you a lot less than you think, and you'll save a lot of money over time. Call the Timeshare Exit Hotline now. It's a free consultation.
800-890-5957. 800-890-5957. 800-890-5957. That's 800-890-5957.
Lenny Baticki brings you PRN at the Track every week here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Get your NASCAR fix with PRN's Garage Pass.
It's hard to just turn it around in 1 week, but I wouldn't be shocked if we did.
I don't think the results have been what we have hoped for or expected, but I think the potential in the cars and the speed has been pretty good.
You know, it's a big deal already, so that's a, you know, big positive for us. So I think now it's just about working together and getting better.
I think the Penske cars are still elite when it comes to plate racing.
Hi, I'm Mark Garrow, tracking the latest racing news every weekday.
We all play a role in keeping our community safe.
Every day, we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life.
It's when something doesn't seem quite right
that it's time to pay attention.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back. Along with Dylan Welch from the CW and also Toby Christie from TobyChristie.com. Brett McMillan, glad to have you with us. Well, Dylan, last week we talked about Daniel Suarez moving on from Trackhouse Racing, something we've kind of expected. And he at the time said that he was not surprised, that he knew it was coming. It was glad it had gotten out. And we've known that because they had more drivers under contract and they had seats available. But Daniel talked a little bit more about it last weekend. And he'd said he knew this was coming for a while. And, you know, both he and Justin Marks said last week that, they think a lot of each other, but it had become time for a change. And those are the things that happen sometimes in a relationship, right?
Yeah. It's a business and they both understand that. And, you know, while Daniel has won a couple of races, I'm sure on both sides, the performance hasn't been as consistent as they both had hoped. And sometimes those relationships, as they said, just run their course. So, I think Daniel will land somewhere. He's too valuable, to the sport, I think, for somebody to not scoop him up, whether it's in the Cup Series or the Xfinity Series or even the Truck Series, he can go there and maybe be a consistent winner, which is sometimes just what you need to kind of get some confidence back as a race car driver. So, and he obviously hasn't lost a step. You know, he won a couple weeks ago, as you mentioned. So, he'll land somewhere and land on his feet, and I'm sure be back in the garage, just with a different operation.
He said, you know, the last 6 to 8 months have been very difficult. He says, I wasn't happy, and I wasn't the only one. We know the Trackhouse, you know, signed Shane Van Gisbergen to run in the Cup Series. And as we talked about in the opening segment today, Shane Van Gisbergen is delivering exactly what Trackhouse signed him for, and that was getting wins on road courses, at least for now, and hoping that he'll develop as an oval track driver. But also they have Connor Zilich under contract. He's been lent out this year to run for Junior Motorsports and is having a very successful season. The question was, how long do you keep him in the Xfinity Series before you move him to Cup? So, Daniel wasn't happy, and I think probably looking at all these other people signed around him and knowing that the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, for sure. The writing was on the wall. I mean, the rumors were starting even last year before his Atlanta win. It was like, man, you know, he might not be back next year. They only had two charters at the time. They got the third charter at the end of last season. I was like, okay, he's still going to be here for a little bit. But once this year kind of started, you kind of saw how the Zilich train was kind of progressing, and it was like, okay, they're going to have to make a decision sooner or later here. Somebody's going to have to, like, there's not enough cars. So somebody's going to have to go. Unfortunately, you know, for Daniel, it's got to be you know, kind of heartbreaking in a way, because, you know, you were there at the beginning of the inception of that team, and a lot of it was built based on, you know, your thought, your input, and just based on some of his comments after the announcement, just feels like his input wasn't being used or received here towards the end. So I'm sure that was kind of the tipping point for him as far as his part of the mutual separation. And then for the team, you know, I mean, you have to make a decision, and you've got SVG, who was about downward annuals and points, but he's got, as we see, the capabilities of just stringing along all these road course wins. So at that point, you have to make that decision, and you're not going to let Zilich walk either, because that's, you know, a potential guy that's going to be a star in the sport for 20-something years and possibly one of the best we've ever seen just based on the trajectory we've seen. So something had to be done, and unfortunately, Daniel was the short straw on this one.
Well, I mean, we talked earlier, Dylan, as we, you know, you're seeing the Xfinity Series week in and week out. Connor Zilich has had an outstanding season so far. Multiple wins, seems to have all the potential in the world. As you talk to people in the garage area, do they feel like he is ready to move to Cup, or is he kind of this Joey Logano type situation that he's going to end up there maybe a year too soon?
Well, I think if you talk to, you know, anybody in that garage, that they don't deny his talent and his ability. You know, you talk to Marty Lindley, his crew chief, he's told me several times that he hasn't seen anybody, you know, like Connor since Kyle Larson. So, you know, they know he's, you know, a shooting star that is probably not going to be in the Xfinity Series garage for very long. You know, but I think, and as you guys know, there's a big difference between the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series. The cars are way different. The level of competition is different. The races are longer. There's more pressure to perform, you know, all these things. You look at a guy like William Byron, who, you know, probably should have won a Truck Series championship, won an Xfinity Series championship, then went to Cup and struggled, you know, and it took kind of getting the right people around him. It took getting his, you know, him getting the necessary experience. It took a team having faith in him and letting him develop and helping to develop him. And now he's a superstar, which is what everybody expected. You know, when he made that jump to Cup, it just took a little bit of time to get there. So I think everybody needs to keep that in mind. You know, if he does go to Cup next year, that he'll be 19 years old, you know, and has not really been even racing that long, just in general. And it's a big step going to Cup. So if he doesn't win right away, the sky is not falling. But I think, you know, Justin Marks obviously knows that, and he's in this for the long haul, not for just a couple of years.
What do you think the options are for Suarez, Toby? I mean, he has said he's an Xfinity Series champion. He doesn't really want to go back to the Xfinity Series. He wants to run Cup. But I think sometimes we see guys just take any ride in Cup just to be in Cup, and it ultimately hurts them more than it helps them just staying up there. So what are his options?
I mean, you talked about the just being in Cup, a stay in Cup situation. You look at kind of like Corey LaJoie refused to kind of take a step back. So he was running kind of a part-time schedule at Rick Ware Racing this year, and we kind of see how things have panned out for him. His career really has taken a dive due to that thought process. So we'll see. But Daniel Suarez is a multi-time Cup Series winner. So from that side of things, things are a little different for him. But at the same time, it's kind of one of those things of what's open, right? So as far as the Cup Series goes, I don't know that there's too much left, really, for him. It's kind of a bad year to be a free agent for Cup. So I think, I mean, honestly, it might be in his best interest to go back for 1 year, whether it be Xfinity or even Trucks, because a lot of people think that Trucks is more comparable to, you know, the Cup car, just with how it races with the aero situation there. So I don't know, but I think going out and having, you know, a win in your one-off Xfinity Series race for Junior Motorsports, one of the strongest teams in the garage in the Xfinity Series, I think that bodes well if you are wanting to step back for a year to Xfinity. I think there's possibly a situation there. I know Trackhouse and Justin Marks have said they're going to help him try to land something. And we know that they work very well with Junior Motorsports. So if he does move back, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in a Junior Motorsports car or something Chevy affiliated, at least for the first year of him being away from track house.
When we come back, some controversy at the end of the Chicago Street Course race. Did NASCAR hold on to the caution flag way too long? Stay with us.
Make your plans now to stay at the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa when NASCAR returns to Las Vegas. They have great race ticket and room packages for you to choose from. The South Point also features a wide variety of excellent dining options at 11 different restaurants. Or you can enjoy the 16-screen movie complex and visit the 64-lane bowling center. Visit southpointcasino.com and make your reservations today. Stay where the racers stay at the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa.
Hey, this is Michael Walter for Echo Park Automotive, and I'm here to tell you why you should shop Echo Park before you buy a car, truck, or SUV. Over half the inventory at Echo Park is priced below $25,000, and car for car, truck for truck, Echo Park Automotive's pricing is $3,000 less than the competition. Maybe that's why Echo Park has over 100,000 five-star reviews. Echo Park Automotive is built to make sure everyone drives away happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
Mark Garrow is your host for Garage Pass here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Anytime you get somebody at the front of the pack who's not used to running up there and who's not been there, the established names are going to scream. They're going to cry. They're going to whine. Oh, there's somebody else coming up here to get my trophy and get my money. It's Carson Hocevar. What's he doing up here? He had just as much right to get in there and force the issue. And if not for the caution, he's a race winner.
Hey, this is Doug Rice of the Performance Racing Network. That's Fast Talk right here on PRN.
Local radio brings people together like never before.
It's a beautiful hometown weekend out there. We've got
your local stations keep you informed and involved with music, talk shows, and real-time news updates you can trust. We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters, connecting you to what matters most. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress to support your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Sweepstakes fans, start your entries. Visit echopark.com/speedway to enter for a chance to win a Toyota Tundra plus a brand new Thor camper. Visit echopark.com/speedway now and you can drive off a winner. And we're welcoming back to the Pit Reporters along with Toby Christie and Dylan Welch. I'm Brett McMillan, and let's talk about the big wreck with Mr. Ware at the end of the race at Chicago. And NASCAR held on to the caution flag, I think we said 34 seconds after he went into the tire barrier. A lot of controversy. I know that NASCAR has said, Brad Moran said on Sirius this week, they're going to go back and look at it and reevaluate, and said they really didn't have a camera angle where they saw him hit the tire barrier, so they weren't aware of how hard the impact was. But immediately, of course, the black helicopters start flying and the grassy knoll comes into view, and people are saying they held on to it until the white flag flew because they didn't want to have a final restart. I mean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I've heard, you know, final restart as the reason for the conspiracies. I've heard that, you know, they didn't want the weather to possibly become a factor if they had to go to another overtime restart there. I don't think it's either one of those. I just think it's, you know, we saw at the Roval last year in the Xfinity Series that they're just not prepared in these situations at these road courses to catch all of these situations, and that's the problem, and it needs to be addressed. But the problem I have with the whole how it all played out was, like you said, he was sitting there for 34 seconds. He radioed to his team that he needed help, and they didn't throw the flag until they saw the window net go down, which is usually the sign that you're okay, right? So if he doesn't put the window net down because he's injured, are we ever throwing the caution, or are we just going to let this keep playing out with a guy who might be injured in his car? So something definitely needs to change. I don't know if it's that there needs to be a direct line of communication for the corner workers that can radio up the tower like, hey, this guy just hit it a ton. You might want to throw it or something. But something definitely needs to change. The process, and we've seen it happen a couple times now between last year and this year. So there's definitely a problem, and it needs to be addressed.
Dylan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know if I could say it any better, truthfully. they're obviously doing the best they can to try to keep everybody safe and to make the right calls and do everything correctly. But, you know, yeah, when somebody hits the wall like that, you know, I think it's probably, in hindsight, it probably would have been smarter to throw it and just, you know, check and make sure that he was good. But it's a slippery slope, right? And I've lost track of how many times we've had this conversation, you know, this year already about, you know, should they have thrown it or should they not have thrown it? I'm sure NASCAR's tired of it too. So surely they're working on a solution to try to prevent it from happening again if they can. And if they find one, I'm sure we'll hear about it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think NASCAR always, you feel like they should err on the side of caution, err on the side of safety. And in this instance, the problem is the timing. You know, weather's bearing down on the area. We're coming up to the white flag lap, and the fact that it got held so long just lends itself to a conspiracy. They held it that long. Whether or not that was the case, that's the way it looks. And sometimes perception is reality.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have a hard time disproving that too, because there's no tangible thing there's no camera in race control, or there's no audio recording of listening to exactly what everybody was saying in there that weren't keying up a microphone to talk to everybody on the track. So it's really hard to disprove conspiracy theories like this, but I still go back to this happened last October. And when it happened last October, they did throw the caution super late, but they did it before the white flag had been reached. And so I truly don't think that is the thought process in the tower. And I hope that's not the thought process in the tower, because that's the thought process of the tower. If I were officiating races, that should not be how it is. I truly just think we've got an issue at figuring out when cars are in tire barriers, when we need to throw the flag, and being able to get that message delivered to the tower in time, I think, is the problem. And it sounds like they're taking it seriously after this. That the video from the crowd that they released on Twitter, or X, however you want to call it, it looked severe. I mean, that was insane. He hit that wall about 100 miles an hour. I went back to the in-car camera on Max, and it was about 100 miles an hour. So that's a hard hit head-on into a wall through a tire barrier.
Well, the challenge, and I think you alluded to it, Dylan, is every situation is different. Yes, we understand that. But I think the fans are just looking for consistency. And consistency is hard to find when you're still saying every situation is different and ruling that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the consistency can be found in the process of how they identify cautions or whatever. You know, if they deem that they have a system that they think is going to work and solve these issues, it's never going to solve every issue, but, you know, solve them to the best of their abilities. Employ that same practice at every single road course you go to, or, you know, and again, it's hard because not every track is the same. Sight lines are different. You know, I get it. Like, there is probably not a end all be all fix, but if you find something that you think is going to work and you can put it in place everywhere it applies, I think that's probably the move to try to, to at least cover their bases and not put themselves in a situation similar to the one that they're facing now with the backlash.
When we come back, Sonoma lies ahead and SVG's driving both races again. Stay with us.
Are you looking for the cheapest prices on car insurance? Then call the Cheap Car Insurance Hotline right now. Hey, you're guaranteed to save money on your car insurance. Most car insurances can be canceled at any time. That means if you find a better deal, you can switch right away. We're not just one company. We offer most of the major brands of car insurance. We're like a discount supermarket for car insurance. And it doesn't matter if you have a good record or a bad driving record. Our agents are experts at finding you the right car insurance for your needs. Our average customer saves hundreds of dollars a year when they call us to switch. So why don't you make this 100% free call right now and see how much you can save on your car insurance.
800-419-1971. 800-419-1971. 800-419-1971. That's 800-419-1971.
Doug Rice is your host for Fast Talk every week on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Whether it's skating around the racetrack on a set of rollerblades or turning laps in a Legends car, join JC Fickinger on JC's Garage.
All it takes is one win, and that one win can completely clear the driver's mind. I could even see it happening if Todd Gilliland wins a race, or Noah Gregson wins a race, Zane Smith wins a race. These guys are guys who are just searching for one win, one chance.
JC's Garage, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, it's Charlie and Debbie, along with NASCAR legend Kyle Petty, inviting you to join us for Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown.
Each week, we'll put it in reverse and take a trip down memory lane, looking back at that week's top 20 country songs from years past.
We'll dive into what made those songs and artists move the needle, what pop culture trends made those years unique.
And you'll get to hear me tell stories only I can tell.
So don't miss Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown right here each week.
Brett McMillan returns with more of the Pit Reporters here on the Performance Racing Network.
Yeah, welcome back. Only Dylan Welch from the CW and Toby Christie from TobyChristie.com. Brett McMillan, glad to have you with us. All right, Dylan, you got to start things off this weekend on the CW, and Shane Van Gisbergen's in the Xfinity race. Do we get a second straight weekend of sweeping everything?
Man, I that would be pretty... Even for him, I think that would be pretty impressive if he was able to do that. I just watched the Xfinity race from last year back earlier today. And I don't know if Austin Hill is going to be able to put up the same sort of fight that he did last year. But he gave it a you know, yeoman's effort to try to keep SVG from winning. And you know, you've got Ty Gibbs in the field this weekend who got crashed early in the race last year. So he was really kind of the only one that on straight up pace at the start of the race was keeping up with SVG. So it's hard to bet against him, right? But it also seems equally hard to believe that that he could do what he did last week again on a completely different you know, completely different layout and, you know, it's a permanent road course versus a temporary street circuit, but that obviously doesn't seem to make a difference for him. He figures out how to make a car go fast anywhere there's left and rights.
Well, not like he hadn't won there before, Toby.
Yeah, no, he's, I mean, it's getting to the point where we're not gonna be able to say that about many road courses, right? That he hasn't won there. So, he's very, very good at these places. Now, the only caveat I would put is maybe a mechanical failure. You know, we've had Austin Hill, we mentioned him a minute ago. He's really good at these super speedway races and the Xfinity Series. He's had a couple mechanical failures that have kind of taken him out of the running of a couple of those this year. That, I think, would be the biggest thing that most people in the Xfinity Series garage would be hoping for to give themselves a chance. But outside of that, he's going to be very, very strong and very, very tough to deal with. Now, he did have, you know, a possible issue brewing this past week with the carburetor area of the car. They were saying that it was kind of acting weird early on, so, you know, maybe if those issues continue on this week, people have a chance, but we'll see. I feel pretty good about his chances, for sure.
You know, this has been a place where, you know, especially in the Cup Series, we've seen a wide variety of guys who have won, you know, including Daniel Suarez won there a couple of years ago. You know, one of the guys who's won there a ton will not be in the race this year, and that's Martin Truex Jr. So, I mean, I think you tend to feel like, even though Van Gisbergen's in the race, Dylan, you tend to feel like it's kind of a wide open race because there are so many guys out there who are good. And it's interesting to me, as I looked at the entry list for this week's race, there are almost no guys in this race or gals. I mean, Catherine Legg is in this race, but there are almost no people in this race who are unusual, who are kind of the road course specialists, quote unquote, coming in and running this week, as we've seen in the past.
Well, and that just goes back to what I said earlier about these guys that race on Sundays, you've got to be good on road courses. It's not like it was 10 years ago when we just went to Watkins Glen and Sonoma, and you could just scrape by and go on down the road. You know, these are legitimate opportunities to score points or win races. And the sports just changed to where these guys have the ability to prepare and study and do simulator work and all these things that that I think, frankly, put them probably at more of an advantage over somebody who is a quote unquote road course ringer that just parachutes in and jumps in one of these cars. You know, I think like SVG is kind of an outlier, but I think, you know, I think it's pretty tough for somebody with no NASCAR experience or very minimal NASCAR experience now to just jump in one of these cars and win a road course race, because the full-time guys are used to the cars and now they're just better road course racers. So, you know, to that point, you know, it could be somebody like a Chase Briscoe or a, you know, a Christopher Bell, you know, guys that have won on road courses before that we maybe, you know, maybe wouldn't think of as quote unquote road course aces, but Sonoma does kind of seem to produce that, you know, that maybe surprise winner every now and then.
As you look at that and listen to Dylan talk about that, Toby, looking down at the guys maybe who haven't won yet this year, who, anybody jump out at you that could be somebody who, you know, who kind of steals one here and gets himself a playoff spot?
Somebody I would look out for as a surprise would be Ryan Preece. He's shown some amazing road course ability this year out of nowhere, because I don't think we saw this at any of the previous stops he's been at in the NASCAR Cup Series. But this year, he seems to have elevated his game. He's won a stage at both COTA and this past weekend. So two stage wins on road courses is incredible for him. But he's had top 10 speed. He's been running consistently in the top 10, which has put him in a position to steal those stage wins. But I think if they decide to go for an actual win, I really feel like he could be, you know, anywhere from first to fifth at the end of one of these things, because he finished seventh this past weekend going for stage wins. So I feel like that's a guy to kind of keep an eye out for, that's kind of oddball-y that you don't really expect going into a road course that could compete.
Anybody you'd be looking at, Dylan?
I'm going to say Ty Gibbs again. I think they've seemed to have turned a little bit of a corner, you know, with that 54 car, and we know how good he is on road courses. So I'll say, I think he's a guy that I think can keep up with SVG and give him a run for his money.
Well, and while I got you looking at the, you know, the Xfinity series, I mean, you got a heck of a race around the bubble in the Xfinity series. I mean, you've got right now, Taylor Gray's 8 points above the cut line, Harrison Burton's 8 points below it, 12 points above it, Jeb Burton, 30 points above it, Sheldon Creed, 30 points below it, Ryan Sieg, and then Christian Eckes, 60 points below it. But you guys look, you know, within 60 points, you've got five guys there battling for three spots.
Yeah, and a lot of those guys, I'm looking at it here too. You know, six of the guys probably that are 8th to 14th are guys that arguably should have won a race already this year, and very well could win a race before the regular season is over. And that includes Taylor Gray, you know, who's on the bubble, probably should have won at Martinsville in the spring, but got muscled out of the way. He's had other second place finishes this summer, obviously finished second at Mexico and had a good shot there to, you know, win the race potentially. Sam Mayer is a good road course racer. He's one that could win on Saturday. Carson Quapel has been an exceptional road course racer this year, which I don't think anybody expected, but he's been really, really good. So, you know, I think this weekend is, you know, if SVG doesn't, you know, just put the whip to everybody, if he has some sort of issue, you know, I think it's wide open with some of these guys that need to win and could use Sonoma as the place to get one of those.
When we come back, white flag lap. Stay with us.
This is Kyle Petty for Echo Park Automotive. As you might imagine, I know a thing or two about cars, and I'm here to tell you about a whole new way to buy a car, truck, or SUV. Did you know that Echo Park Automotive has over 95,000 five-star reviews? On top of that, every car that Echo Park Automotive sells goes through a 190-point inspection to make sure that it looks and drives like new, so you leave happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
When it comes to maintaining your engine to run at peak performance, trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant. Z-Max soaks into metal, so it's easy to add to your oil or gas to disperse carbon buildup in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. Protect your vehicle's engine to the max with Z-Max. Check us out at zmax.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter to find out more about our full line of products. Remember the name, Z-Max, for your car, big rig, small engines, firearms, and more. That's Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
Catch Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown with Charlie and Debbie here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Start your engine!
Here we go, racing in the Toyota Save Mark 350.
Tyler Reddick now looks to the inside of Joey Logano. He doesn't have enough. Logano slams the door.
Side by side, Ross Chastain is on the inside of Alex Bowman. Alex Bowman on driver's left as they go through the right-hander in turn number 7.
Oh my gosh, it's hard to count the number of cars that are involved. Almost everybody refires and gets going.
The Toyota Save Mark 350 from Sonoma. Sunday, July 13th at 2:30 Eastern on PRN.
The green flag is out, and here's Shane Van Gisbergen leading the pack.
Shane Van Gisbergen will get underneath the car of Jesse Levenell, race side by side into turn 12.
Trouble in front of me here. Multiple cars are wrecking. It started with a spin. I saw Josh Williams go around. Heavy damage to it. Riley Hurts.
Allmendinger spin goes off in the grass. Everyone's going to miss him. They'll clear him.
The Pit Boss Food Max 250 from Sonoma. Saturday, July 12th at 4 Eastern on PRN.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
And welcome back. It's time now for our white flag laps. And first up from the CW, it's Dylan Welch.
I'm going to stay with the Xfinity talk. And I want to give an attaboy to Jack Perkins, who there's been a lot of SVG talk, and rightfully so. Jack Perkins is a former V8 supercar racer from Australia, was in the Joe Gibbs Racing 19 this weekend, qualified fifth and got crashed early, so didn't really get a chance to show his stuff. But I was super impressed, you know, with him just jumping in one of those cars and, you know, only getting, as he said to me before the race, basically 10 real laps in it before they just threw him to the wolves and said, go racing. And he was really fast. So, really cool guy. He'll race. He's going to race at Portland again later this year. So hope that goes better for him. But I was impressed with his speed right out of the gate. He did a good job.
I appreciate it. And we'll look forward to that. Next up from TobyChristie.com, it's Toby Christie.
We talked about Ben Kennedy earlier and his you know, thoughts on how to keep mixing up the schedule each year. I want to say it's really cool that he's been kind of doing some stuff that Bill France Jr. Was kind of really interested in doing back in the day as far as international racing goes. And street course racing. Honestly, a lot of people don't realize it, but when the LR series was kind of being formed, that LR car back in the 80s, the whole reason was because Sonoma wasn't on the schedule yet, and they were trying to find an extra road course event, and they were thinking about doing street racing in the Cup Series. It didn't come to fruition back then, but it's cool to see it's happening now. It's cool to see that Ben Kennedy's kind of bringing on some of the France family, you know, legacy that they were trying to build back in the day. He's kind of bringing it all back and actually pulling it off. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, it is indeed. LR series. Hadn't thought about that in years.
They were doing that around. They were testing it here, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They were. Well, you know, this end season challenge, I don't think has worked out like TNT thought it was going to when they came up with the idea because, well, nobody you thought was going to be in the finals is going to be in the finals. The guys who are left are Ty Dillon, Bowman, Nemechek, Eric Jones, Priest, Reddick, Ty Gibbs, and Smith. The one thing that's going to work out that I don't think TNT expected is with the guys left, it's going to be really a big deal for these guys. These guys didn't expect to be competing for $1 million. And because these are the lesser name guys, winning $1 million is going to be really, really, really big.
Join us again next week for the Pit Reporters on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.